What's up? Welcome to Inside the Game. This is episode 45, and this is where we are 10% real people and about 90% telephone trolls. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm DJ Wheat, joined as always by Check Six Pain user EG Idra and EG in Control. Before I say hello, boys, I just want to give a special shout out to our sponsors, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Kingston HyperX. Of course, Kingston HyperX just joining the Inside the Game family, but it's nice to have them on board so we can do this lovely show every week. And I say that, but I should be saying every month, because it's been almost goddamn 30 days since I've talked to you guys. So hello, I'm sorry that it's been so long for us to get back together and share these intimate experiences with thousands of people every week. What's up? How's it going, guys?
Yeah. It's going good. I was tweeting people your old epileptic gaming video, just like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Where you guys get asked how come there's no women or black people on your show?
How come there are no women or black people on Inside the Game?
Why aren't there any women or black people on our show?
I don't know. Well, I mean, Pain News is black.
Yeah, he kind of takes it all.
Actually, yeah.
What is he?
I can't tell you enough, like, obviously, that attitude, that excitement can't happen on this show, because I can't imagine Greg double-birding the fucking screen and,
what
like...
What do you mean, man? It's just a matter of time.
You actually can't?
It's just a matter of time.
I definitely can.
I was like, I'm not the one to worry about that.
you're right.
It's kind of reserved, maybe. I don't know.
Good times, though, man. I showed that to Anna last night as
thank
well.
You. And... It's amazing how, you know, videos from 5 years ago, maybe even more, will just sort of, like, randomly resurface like that every once in a while. I like it. I'm more of a PS3ology fan myself, being a big Sony fan, but every 4 months that one seems to pop up. Pain user.
I'm waiting for people to try to use this like
against me.
Yeah. You know that's what's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's like all the videos that all the stories and videos that Day 9 made disappear when he got big.
Oh.
Well, my favorite part, though, is that Wheat actually hasn't changed at all, so they can try to use it against him. They'll be like, eh.
I said that exact same thing yesterday. What's the point?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, the rage, it's nothing new.
Stupid, bleeping, cold mother... Deep.
Insta-hang-up.
Yeah.
Still happened on the old shows.
Good times. Maybe one day, Jeff. Maybe one day. We're getting there, though. We're degrading. So adding the phones is like the first step for us to get there, man. So we've taken the first step. We're well on our way. Pain user, you've been streaming like
crazy. I've been playing
lately.
Again.
Yeah, how's that going?
It's fun. TVZ is really tough right now, though. But other than that, it's fun.
Man, you're really pushing the issue tonight.
it's seriously problematic for me right now.
Pain user comes on, he's like, all right, guys, we totally need to add the state of the issue of TVZ. And so I added it to the list, man. It's on there.
You just got a teaser, man, from that rage. I mean, you heard the passion in his voice, right? Been playing StarCraft. TVZ's really hard.
It really is, though.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. I don't know where we want to start tonight, but we'll definitely talk about
it. If you can't talk about Pain User, we'll get a Velo on here.
He will. He will. And we'll open up the phone lines tonight. So let's go ahead and let's get started.
There you go. Avila, you can call in. If he's listening out there, someone tell him.
Who?
Avila.
Oh, Avila. Like,
have you ever heard of Avila?
Yes, Avila.
We're going to get like a bunch of people trying to imitate his voice and mannerisms and stuff when they call in now. That's going to be the troll of the night.
I think
Karen players are having a tough time with early game TVZ because there's too many goddamn queens out here.
Having like burning a piece of paper at the end of it, staring at Jeff.
Then he starts tearing up.
Oh, no. Let's not get super mean here. That's too much.
Yeah.
No, it's Avila.
Avila's a nice guy. He cares a lot, and he works hard.
Yeah, playing 50-minute games every single game would give. That takes
a
lot.
He does. He actually does. That's fucking passion.
I wonder what his average game time is.
I think it's over half an hour. I would not be surprised. Because he stopped T-Rexing. He used to be either T-Rex or Turtle. Now it's just Turtle.
T-Rex or Turtle.
He actually plays longer games than anybody else. So, like, his anger makes sense. Because when you lose a 50-minute game where you're setting up, like, missile turrets meticulously all over the map, and then they just, you just die, I'd be fucking mad. Yeah.
He does that against Protoss, too.
He does it all three matchups. Have you seen how angry missile turrets are? It's not a bad idea to make a bunch of those.
It's like old Evade, except like with better things now.
Yeah, they have insanely high DPS. It's like 27 or something. Something ridiculous.
They're just fucking mad, man.
The picture of the week definitely, you know, Idra, I don't know how you keep coming up with them. I don't think this one's photoshopped. It's not Flash pointing at you in a wall, putting his eternal bounty on your head. But I think the caption of this was like, you know, Idra gives his not bad face destroying a Protoss death ball with Ultras, Infestors, and what was it? Broods? I don't know. Zerglings?
No, it was Ultra, mostly Banelings plus Ultra.
Oh, Banelings. Banelings, right. And
Greg made that same face at the Lizard Invitational in North America.
Right after Selecti. So
he leans over and is like,
It's the not bad, you know?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
It actually worked.
I'm
pretty sure as Zerg I've made that face a couple times.
I've been meaning to mess around with that style since I saw Symbol do it to Parting, and I just finally got around to it. And I finally worked out a build that seems okay to do it. And then it worked really well, so I was like, shit. Golden goes too much ultralings. It's the Banelings that really do it. You only want to have, like, four ultras. I was more concerned with just, like, how to get to it without dying regularly. So I actually just had to spend some time, like, figuring out the timings.
It's great that we can capture that one moment in time. Like, oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Stills of anything in motion, I always look fucking funny. I don't know why.
Well, since it's like the exact, like,
I
not
have such
bad
an expressive face,
face that's,
you know.
That's the best. Since it's the perfect. It's like the perfect. Not bad. All right. Let's see. State of TVZ. Well, no one wants to talk about that. We'll skip that for later. That was just a joke, pain user. Sorry. Liquid Rising got released this week, guys, and this is kind of it's kind of nice that one of these documentaries like hits the light of day when there was the .com documentary boom of early 2012, late 2011, and one of them's coming out after being delayed for a while. But I just talk about the little bit of the documentary, and then the fact that I was a bit surprised to see EG sort of have a part in it in terms of that rivalry that exists that is more like fucking rainbows and unicorns, because it shows you guys practically like, you know, arm in arm, like kissing one another. Like that was what's on the cutting room floor, but instead it's, you know, Machine and Chef like buddy-buddy. You know, maybe there's a little bit of elbow rubbing going on in there. We don't know. But it was still cool to see that, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it, too, as far as that being a part of it. And, Jeff, you're in it a couple times, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give the pros and cons of it. To start off with your point, I guess, getting away from the pros and cons, like, we all were interviewed, obviously, for that, so we kind of knew that was coming. And it's fun because there is a rivalry. We do like to beat each other, and I think Alex Garfield said it best in that interview where he talked about, well, a part of the reason why there is a rivalry is because we're number one and two, like, people can call that arrogant or cocky, but at the end of the day, when it comes to marketing your players, traveling them to events, paying them respectable wages, and really just giving them opportunities that other teams simply wouldn't, it is Team Liquid and it is Team Evil Geniuses. So Korea support, international support, etc. And I think that that kind of gets reflected with just the way the community gives it attention. So I thought that was cool. I thought they portrayed it really nicely. They talked about the ups and downs. You know, they've definitely beaten us a few times. We've definitely beat them. So it was kind of cool they gave fair coverage that way. But as far as pros and cons of it, like the pros of this documentary are like, you could actually do an hour and a half interview with just Nazgul, and I'd find it fucking fantastic. I would be enthralled. I would be interested. I would watch it. I would enjoy it. It's really hard for me not to enjoy something StarCraft II related, I think. And then the other pros of it, too, is, like, it was a one-man project. This is actually one guy that did it by himself, that Kruger guy. And I thought, given that, he did a pretty good job. The cons of it, though, is it shouldn't have been a one-man job. This is Team Liquid. This is one of the biggest teams on the planet, the biggest community website for StarCraft II. They raised $42,000, which I'm guessing is five or six times more than what it cost to make the thing. Maybe I'm off, maybe I'm exaggerating, but they made money on this. And they could have – I really feel like it's a missed opportunity. Like Team Liquid deserves one of the best documentaries you can make because they're one of the most fascinating teams. Kind of coming up from 10 years ago from a community website, A poker legend from a Brood War professional, Nazgul, you know, taking his money and turning it into a passion project. You know, the players coming from different places. That was all a really cool opportunity, but what ends up happening was it felt like I watched a pretty well-done YouTube channel. Like, okay, this is a pretty good interview for a YouTube channel. Like, that's how it played out to me. I didn't feel like I could say, that was awesome, I want to order the DVD. I feel like the DVD of this would show up and it would be like a laser jet printout of, like, Team Liquid on a disc that was, like, obviously glued and pasted on, and the box would be like a...
Were you expecting...
Yeah.
You were expecting something else?
I was expecting something different, for sure.
I don't know. When I heard how quickly it was coming out, because like we were all around at all the events, we know when they started filming and stuff, then to hear that they're actually releasing it now, like the GG movie documentary, I forget the exact name, but one of the original documentaries that focused just totally on EG, started filming before them, and they're still in production right now. Like that, they just had almost no time. And like Jeff said, it was a one-person job. That was a bad thing, but that was the reality of it. It's one guy working for not very long. I would have been very surprised if they had managed to put out anything more than this. But again, echoing Jeff, like it really should have been more. There's just so much interesting stuff about Liquid. It's such a great story within all of esports, not just StarCraft II, that they could have done so much more with it. It was kind of like a wasted opportunity.
It's not a failure. You know, at the end of the day, it's decent enough. Like, it's not like you watch that and cringe the whole time. The TLO tidbit in particular was like... It was just a little bit shy of making me fucking cry my eyes out with how beautiful and awesome it was. The Nazgul interviews were really engaging and awesome. Hader, you started to kind of get the feel that he is actually a funny guy, like everybody says. But there's a lot of valid criticism out there saying that like it felt like the introduction to players, it felt like this was a three-part thing where this is the first part of how awesome the documentary is supposed to be, but then it just stops and it turns out that it's an introduction to the players of Team Liquid, you know?
Do you feel like it was, and this isn't a bad thing by any means, but I'm sort of getting the idea that maybe you guys feel that it was more fan service
than
a documentary?
I feel like it was ultra player centric, and I feel like they didn't capture a lot of the things about esports that are super exciting, like some of the matchup rivalries, like reaction shots before and after games, stuff like that, the really like dramatic aspects of the game. A lot of it, to me, it felt like just kind of like a slapshot series of interviews, and then we'd kind of get Nazgul's final words on, you know, X and Y, and he'd kind of like sum it up, and then they would just kind of repeat that process throughout. You did get to know the players on Liquid a lot more, especially like Hader and Sheth, who are not the most verbose players on the team, so you definitely got insight into their lives a little bit and what they're all about. So I don't know. I mean, I just think they failed to capture a lot of the most exciting parts about esports and focused a lot more on, like, the players. It was ultra player-centric instead of
I mean, but more about the game. It's supposed to be a team documentary.
Well, no, I know. I think it should have been about the team, but there's definitely things you can capture. And I think they focused on the EG Liquid rivalry and the whole Huck thing, like, way too much.
I mean, the interesting thing is that aside from a couple of, say, the fighting game documentaries that have been released, there's not necessarily a whole lot to compare it to. However, there are apparently like 30 more documentaries coming out. So eventually, you know, these are going to be competing against one another, setting a bar, being beaten or not.
It's one of the meanest things, but kind of actually good that someone said is they're like, well, this is the first documentary to be released, and it's, I think it set the bar pretty low. So, like I said, it's not a failure, but that is good for every documentary to follow it, because I don't think they have to go too far to really impress. Like,
it's good for what it was. Teasers, it's so limited.
Yeah, the teasers that Star Nation released with the White Rod documentary, each one of those made me think I was looking at a Sundance film, like a little chunk of like. I felt like Steve Carell was going to come out of the fucking side of the screen and like start explaining how, you know, his like terrible single parenting experience is really throwing him for a loop and he's going to try to kill himself. But then it turns out everything's great. I kept expecting that. Like that's the quality it was. But then when I watch this, I'm like, wow, this is awesome. Whose YouTube channel is this? I want to subscribe.
All right. What do you guys feel like this does for StarCraft II and its exposure was the other question that came along with this.
Actually, probably good.
Yeah.
I felt like that was like one of the biggest downfalls because it is so player centric. It's like great for people who are fans of good. Everyone gets to know the players they love better. But then if you look at it from an esports perspective, like people who aren't as familiar with the scene already, it's not
that exciting.
Because it's just like getting to know players who you don't know and you're not really getting introduced to the scene. There's no story. There's nothing to get excited about if the players themselves don't already excite you via their personalities. So I don't really think it does that much for esports, besides the fact that everyone's going to be like, look at how awesome this is. Maybe
that's kind of why I was asking about more like the fan service versus a documentary.
Yeah.
Because you know, I think there's definitely like a huge difference.
With fans.
I think it'll be, like we said, I think one of the most apt things you can say about it is missed opportunity. Like, I don't think at the end of the day anyone's going to talk about this as some huge killing esports detriment. Like, oh my god, you're going to turn off droves of people and they're going to go away from StarCraft 2.
No.
This is a great movie. It's entertaining. It's engaging. But because of the way it was done, because of what it could have been, like if this was a documentary for Complexity, cool. You know, that's really informative. I didn't know about them. But it is Team Liquid. There is really high expectations. The hope is that Team Liquid produces this content that's like mind-shattering, earth-shattering, just amazingness. And if that's not fair, so be it. But I would say that that's pretty cool that we expect that from Team Liquid, right? It'd be really shitty if we expected, like, the documentary came out and it was this, and we're like, yeah, that's about what I expected from Team Liquid. Like, you know, a bunch of interviews and kind of one guy did it. Yeah, that sounds about right. It'd suck if we were okay with that, I think.
And so, well, we've got, like, Star Nation coming out. We've got GG, the Tasteless Sons of StarCraft. There's a couple other that I'm missing out on, but we'll continue to watch said documentaries. And any final comments? Liquid Rising.
If you haven't seen it, watch it. You know, I mean, despite criticism,
definitely give it a watch.
It's
interesting.
You're not going to get dumber watching it, that's for sure. All right, so before we go into probably what will be the interesting topic of the evening, I've got one that I want to talk with you guys about.
Do it.
And so I kind of labeled this as choosing a race, but I don't know. That might be a little misleading. And so my question to you guys, all of you guys, is that as you know, I absolutely love Zerg, love playing a Zerg, and I love watching Zerg games.
I saw you playing Protoss the other day.
Shut up, man. Shut
up. Drop the bomb.
So... My heart is definitely – I've definitely got a Zerg heart, right? But there's no doubt in control. There's no doubt in my mind that when I play Protoss, which it was my beta race, that I perform better, I win more games, I have better macro, etc.
I think that's a very easy conclusion to draw. You know, just saying.
I think so, too. I mean, honestly, like, my head says to play Protoss, but my heart says to play Zerg.
But what does Zerg have?
I know this is, like, a massive first-world problem, but it's, like, I feel like if I seriously want to do, like, a play-to-win attitude. And, like, I started off-racing for a couple reasons. It was because I had some really enlightening conversations with Apollo and, like, you know, focusing on particular builds and you know, not only learning to play that way, but also from caster's perspective, like, that really helping out, and it has. But the sort of side effect of that has been this. Jeff, I kind of think I know what both of you guys are going to say, but I still want to hear it from you.
I always get asked, you know, people tweet at me or whatever, they PM and they say, so-and-so race, I feel like I play better with this one, this is the one my friends play, what race should I choose? And the answer is always the same. It's the one you enjoy the most. It's absolutely always the one you enjoy the most. So, like, if your heart is in Zerg and you really enjoy the process of learning and trying to get your mechanics up to snuff, because Zerg, creep spread, overlord spread, queen inject, like, they are the more mechanically demanding race. I don't think there's many people that would question that. And if that's engaging to you, if that's fun, if that's what gets your jollies in the game, then do it. But if it's just about winning, if it's just about executing a two-base all-in or just the style of Protoss or whatever that really makes you have fun, then you're doing yourself a disservice by, like, forcing yourself to play something you don't enjoy as much. And that's
the problem.
The way it
goes. It's not like I cringe because you win more. That's not really cringeworthy. And it's like I feel like there's still definitely I feel like winning without Colossus is a satisfying experience.
I think you win more to an extent with Protoss, though, right? Like, it gets way harder at, like, High Masters.
I'm sure. It's got to.
They've level. Always said that, that below the highest levels, Protoss is, like, the most winning race, because it's pretty easy. You make Stalker, Sentry, Zealots, Colossus, you know. You actually just fucking make whatever you want, and when you A-move, they require, at the lower levels, the least amount of micro. Like, Force Shields aren't as important, you know? Blinking isn't, like, blink micro. It's like, I want to get that thing that's further away, and then you blink at it. And then you kill that. I think the Roach style might have made it a little bit easier for Zerg, but again, because of the mechanics, I think a lot of Zergs are missing their injects. They're not creep spreading. And if they don't kill the Protoss by the time they get Colossus out and they're still making Roaches, they die. You know?
So are we debating between Zerg and Protoss here or picking a race?
I don't know. I mean,
follow your heart versus follow your
winning. Follow your heart versus follow your head, yeah. I think that's pretty much the best way you can describe it.
It depends on what's more important to you. Like, if you really, really enjoy Zerg and you're okay with not winning as much, then you stick with the one you're passionate about or whatever. If competition is super important to you and you just can't deal with losing or winning
pick
is
what you yeah,
then you do it wins most.
It does bring up, actually, I mean, I know this is going to upset and control because he doesn't like it when I speak his name, but you know, Slasher recently had that interview with Boxer where Boxer's like, I'm going to come back and Heart of the Swarm and I'm not going to play Terran. And it's probably like a similar struggle of like, you know, his legacy is Terran.
Well,
you know.
You know what I have to ask you?
What?
While Boxer was complaining about races and balance, what was MVP doing? What was MVP doing back at home?
Practicing.
Yeah. We're talking about Slasher, not Wolf Jeff.
I know, this is a big inside joke. Thank you, you got the Wolf reference.
Okay.
Nobody gets that. It's a post on Reddit. It's really good. Anyways, it's actually funny because Boxer's held to a higher standard than any other human being on the frickin' planet, but the butt that I followed it up with is that Koreans are actually, and a lot of people just romanticize them beyond belief, but they're actually the worst balance complainers ever. If you were to actually like follow Dong Regu along his path of what he thinks is balanced and imbalanced, and then like have a child every time it swung a different direction, you'd have like 30 kids right now. The guy like, ZVT is unwinnable. And then like 2 weeks later, he's like, ZVT is fucking imbalanced for Terran. And then another week later, he's like, I don't know what to say about this matchup. It's fucking balanced as shit. They swing all over the place, man. Boxer right now is looking in, and his Korean Terrans are, like, not winning TVZ right now, but all the other Korean Terrans are, so he's decided he's going to go Protoss or Zerg.
Boxer's always complained about imbalance a lot. Like, I would be very surprised if he actually does switch. But, yeah,
There's no way.
Yeah. Like he actually
defies the laws of physics.
In StarCraft 1, he was originally a Protoss player, and he switched after a balance patch that nerfed something about Protoss. He was originally Protoss and then switched to Terran because of balance.
That just broke my heart.
Nice.
That's
bullshit. slanderous Zerg material.
All right, well, I'll think more about it because on one hand, I like to fucking win. On the other hand, like blowing up Marines with Banelings is fucking incredibly satisfying.
Banelings are cool, man.
Banelings are great.
I actually always found Banelings interesting because of all the Zerg units, that's actually Anna's favorite. And I never would have thought. Like a little suicidal bag of like acid.
Yeah, that doesn't really seem quite. It's cuddly in a special way.
It is.
Yeah, that's always weird too. Like the people that bring plushes to events and like characters of Zerg units, it's always a Baneling, and I'm like, I feel like this is like what Disney did to hippopotamuses, where people view them as really adorable and awesome, but then
they
you see a hippopotamus.
They are adorable and awesome, man.
They kill more people than any of the
animals.
Hippopotamuses, they would rip you in half and drink the marrow out of your bone, man.
Hold on, let me see if I have the picture still. This is, dude, the look on my kid's face with what he is wearing. This is great.
It's adorable. And then it blows up.
No, this is. This psychotic Baneling look right here. Here we go.
Make sure to later give time to Pain User to flesh out why TVZ is wrong. Because if this was our TVZ conversation, the forums would devour us alive. It would just eat us whole.
Banelings are really cute. I like it when they blow up Marines. Discussion done.
There you go.
That's a pretty adorable picture.
Dude, these are hats. And like the arms actually clasp around you. They're completely awesome. And my kid looks like
before.
He wants to just suicide all his Banelings into rocks and stuff. Good kid.
Too little a celebrity. It's ridiculous.
All right. What's next on the docket? Well, we could transition into. No, let's do this.
No, so, let's do this.
So, Total Biscuit was on Real Talk. Real Talk's a show that this guy named JP does. So TB on RT with JP. And
that was good. I see what you did there.
And so there was this discussion about how the EG Team House is not really like that much of a training house.
And, yeah, dude.
And like so, I listened to this particular part specifically, and while I was listening, I thought it was kind of funny because I was hearing this story from Stefano, who was talking about staying at the EG training house, apparently saying something to the effect of, all they do is play. Like, all they do is sit around and play all the time, just play.
What? He's funny about that.
Why do you play all this? So, you know, in 1 week I hear two completely different things. Obviously, you
and
guys
how many
on the
times
show,
has TB been
it.
To the lair?
I don't know. But
and how many times has Stefano been to the lair?
I want
to
hear. Stefano's been to lair once, but
Stefano's been once. Totals.
We're not six either, so that's why I figured I'd talk to In Control. And
I'll go first, if that's okay. When I first heard this, I prickled up, and I got really upset, and I was thinking to myself, "That's really unfair." He's a big name kind of e celebrity, so when he says that, a lot of people are just, you know, they're going to jump on the train, and it's going to really suck. The Reddit thread was tough to read through. I had to stop halfway through just because it was, like, really, really upsetting me. And I sat and I thought about it, and I kind of calmed down, and I started reflecting on this, and I thought, what kind of person do I want to be? And in the past, there's been criticism against the lair. There's been EG gets a lot of attention, good and bad. You know, every time one of our guys doesn't win a tournament or gets knocked out by somebody that's, like, only another pro or something like that. The first response is always, you know, oh, the curse, and they're not doing that well. What do they do at the house? That kind of a thing. And in the past, I've always kind of lashed out at those people. I've lashed out at that stuff and said, that's unfair. That's ridiculous. Like, we haven't had enough time. We are working hard. This was the best they were playing before a tournament, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the day, you give more strength to those arguments when you legitimize them and yell at the people that say that kind of stuff. So when Total Biscuit said this, I want to become a different kind of person. I don't want to tweet, you know, Total Biscuit commentating on this would be like Edward Scissorhands commentating on, like, basketball. Like, it doesn't actually fucking make sense. The connections are about the same. You know, he's a absolute shit mind at StarCraft. He doesn't really know what he's talking about, and he hasn't seen or been to the lair. And he's really only commentating off stuff he reads on the forums when he's looking for comments about him so that he can yell at those people each time they do it. So I thought about that. I thought about it long and hard, and I realized, like, at the end of the day, there is some truth to what he's saying, basically. The results aren't for us. Just they're not at EG quality. Like, we want to be winning every tournament. When Puma gets knocked out in the round of 8 or the round of 16, that's not good enough. You know, when Greg, who's a multi-tournament winner, is in a bit of a slide or a long slide, that sucks. And to like... It's weird to me, though, when people take it to the next level and they go, like, well, they must just be hanging out that house. They must not be taking it serious. They must not train. It must just be a frat house where they hang out. And that actually led to a thread that went to, like, 12 pages on Team Liquid where they were talking about how the girls here are a distraction, Abby and Anna, and the dogs are a distraction. And that's when it started to get to me that it was like, you can't give strength to this. You can't talk about it because, I mean, outside of a show, I guess, but, like, people are going to run wild with these theories. They're going to go crazy. And at the end of the day, as Stefano talked about, we actually play all day. We work hard. We talk about it. We're trying to find ways to win. And if that means getting a coach for the house, maybe we do that. If that means setting up a rigid schedule, changing the way we train, we're going to do that because we're committed to winning. And it's weird that people would think that EG would drop a bunch of money on a house and then not give a shit about results. Like, that's one of the theories that floats around, is that EG doesn't care about results. What the fuck? I mean, we were built on championships. Like, that's how EG's here. We don't have a player in our past where it's like, that guy became famous for having sex with, like, Chobot, and then, like, we got sponsors from Trojan and stuff, and all of a sudden we had this money and we invested in teams that, like, placed well. No, we had Counter-Strike championship teams. We had Grubby for a while. We had
Jay Wong.
We have Justin Wong, like one of the most, if not the most famous fighting game player of all time. People are quick to count out Greg, but I'm sorry, he's still one of the most successful StarCraft II players there are. Like, Huck is a 2-time MLG champion, the only one of his kind. Like, we still have this stuff, and we're still working to get there. So you can criticize our results, because you're right. We should win every tournament, and when we don't, it is disappointing. You can criticize me. If you think I'm overly compensated and you don't like me, that's fine. But it's weird when people take that and they run really wild. So I think what Total Biscuit said wasn't completely unreasonable. He talked about the foreigner scene and how they need to step it up, and then he used us as an example. But to call it a frat house and say we don't work hard, methinks you doth protest too much. Like, that's just that's taking it too far, and it's a shame, because there's a lot of people that put a lot of value in what he says when it's mostly uninformed about that kind of a thing.
Yeah, he hasn't been to the house. He doesn't know how we actually work. Like, if you just look at our streaming hours for some of us, for Demuslim doesn't stream as much for other reasons, but even then, yesterday he streamed for like 5 hours. And then if you look at Jeff and me and Bryce, we stream like as much as most other foreign players practice, and then we practice on top of that. So like, to say we don't work hard is pretty ridiculous. And even to say that we have disproportionately bad results is kind of ridiculous. Like, look at the non-Korean tournament winners for the last year. It's like Mana, I don't think Stefano's actually, Stefano won the Lone Story Cup, which is relatively small. Stefano's done amazing, but if you look outside of that, how many foreign winners are there actually? Like, no one has great results. Everyone needs to do better and have better results. And that applies to us as well as everyone else. But to then look at that and say, okay, well, the lair is a failure because of that. No, that's just kind of like, we have a few disadvantages the Korean players don't have, and we as a whole, as a community, need to work harder and practice harder and do better. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that the lair is ineffective. We're all working really hard here. We have more resources available to us than pretty much anyone else, and we use them to get better at the game and to promote our team and promote our brand so that we can keep getting those resources and keep getting new players to practice with. Like, we now have Thorstein. Yep. He's in the house for a month. We got to practice with him and watch him play. And Ben switched up his style because he saw that. Marcus switched up his style because he watched Ben play. Everyone's benefiting from everything we do, not just the practice, but also from all the content we put out and how well we promote EG just by having this house and acting the way we do. And so for Total Biscuit to look at that and to say that solely because we don't have results that it's a frat house or that we don't work hard enough is kind of fucking insulting, because we practice a lot.
Yeah. And like, I mean, we're going to come off defensive here, and I apologize.
Well, I mean, rightfully so. You should, because yeah. It's like someone's attacking your home at the end of the day. But let me ask a question, right? Because a lot of people are like, okay, well, this is, based off of what was said, there are some comments made that Idra, even you had said in the past, that you had not yet, or at least the house had not yet figured out what a true training regimen was going to be, or you know, what was going to be the most effective, or something along those lines. So, I mean, I guess first off, do you recall what was said, and do you feel like you guys are on your way to figuring that out? Or, I mean, we've talked about the house before, but I have to imagine, like, outside of Korea, it's not like these types of houses are abundant. It's not like right. No one has written the fucking book on how exactly, when you have six guys together, you can get the most out of training. So I guess I'm asking you, like, how do you feel, and how do you deal with that and adjust that accordingly?
Yeah, that go ahead, Greg, go ahead.
That quote was discussing the balance between having a rigid schedule, like having everyone practice in 4-hour chunks from 11 till 3 and then from 5 till 9 or whatever, as opposed to just having a more laid back, everyone chooses what works best for them. Sorry. I'm sure not sure what the best way to handle that is, because everyone has different things. Like, people like different sleep schedules, people practice in different amounts in different ways. So it's hard to find that balance without a Korean coach just saying, do this, even if it's less efficient for you, because we think it's best on the whole. So we're not sure what the balance is for that. But even back then, it didn't mean we didn't work hard. It just means we're not sure what the most efficient way for everyone to cooperate is. But on our own, we're still playing a ton, no matter what
and that's
the setup is.
Something I want to clear the air on, too, that I'm very willing to take the blame for. Because, again, I'm kind of like, I end up being the mouthpiece, rather, for where a lot of this stuff kind of comes out. And I've talked about this house, and I think I've allowed the analogy to slide where it's like, this is a Korean training house or something like that. And again, if people can find me saying that or there's a quotation of that, I take full responsibility for that. But The way it's functioned and the way we've talked about it, and the way people have seen it actually be used is not as a Korean training house. This is not a place where we bring in 12-year-old unknown players and through literally just the effort of 13 to 14 hours a day, we make them into strong StarCraft players. This is a training house where you are cultivating talent, you're trying to get better, and if you're not getting results out, there's stress on you, it's bad, it's wrong. You get talked to, you get worked with, you get there's like a team of people that kind of follow it up. But the amount of content we produce and like what we work on for our sponsors in 1 week surpasses what most teams do in an entire year. And the house makes that possible with the studio at Scott's house, with all the content that we're working on and stuff like that. So like, it is defensive, and you know, people can point this and be like, oh, I control so mad stuff. That's fine. But at the end of the day, this is what we do. So if you don't want that information, if you don't think that's an answer, then that's fine too. I mean,
all right. No, I think some good comments give you guys an opportunity to, you know, to, I guess, retort. Let's go ahead and move on. That good? You, unless Painies, or you want to jump in?
Yeah,
there,
if you have questions, that's fine too. It's a big topic. A lot of people have feelings about it.
Sure, I know we'll get phone calls about it as well. But go ahead, Painies.
I know the 4 days I spent there, everybody was just playing around the clock, or sleeping, or eating.
And we tried to cut back on the sleeping and eating part too, to be honest with you. Like we've evaluated where we've been allocating our time, and quite frankly, some of us have been sleeping more than 5 hours. It's not.
Yeah, I was actually just looking through my Twitch stats because I was kind of curious. I have streamed 54 hours since the end of Anaheim, and it's like I practice in addition to streaming, so I don't know.
Well, that's at least 4 hours of like sitting around in menus, so
I know,
let's
right?
not get too overboard.
It's legitimate.
That's the part that kind of bothers me. Like I said, like if Total Biscuit came out and said, like, look, the expectations for EG are higher than what they're achieving. The results need to be better. They're spearheading, like, non-Korean gameplay, and this is why foreigners are trailing. That's all legitimate. Like, that's fine. I want that expectation. I think people should pressure us for better results. And EG is not okay with our results. Like, they're great. They're better than everybody else, but it's still not the best. Like, or not, like, as good as it could be is, I guess, the point I'm trying to make. Like, We had three guys in the top 16 of NASL. We're sending two out of the eight over there are EG guys. We would like it to be five or six guys are sent over there. You know, like, we're working towards that. But when he calls it a frat house, the connotation is that we just sit around and drink beer and actually just hang out and bro it out the whole time. That is actually insulting. Greg, like you said, is training literally 10, 12 hours a day. I've been doing that for a long time, and then people always ask, like, how come you're not winning then? And then that, like, is a knife to my heart. And it's like, I don't fucking know. I'm trying as hard as I can. But it sucks when big-time celebrities like a Total Biscuit, they just make they, like, just assume. They're like, well, you guys obviously aren't trying, and you're just hanging out.
I think.
And it's like, shit, man. We're working hard.
I think the whole thing can be summed up as him just being really uninformed on the subject and just making an asinine statement for shock value.
You know, like, you know what I thought up to? Let me do this. Let me appease the part of my mind that I'm trying to be better than. So I'll start tomorrow being better, okay? The moment he said, like, it's so bad, he calls a frat house and stuff, I started to think, and this guy's my buddy, so this is actually really bad, and that's fine. I'll apologize to him and buy him a beer. But ever since Total Biscuit started sponsoring Bling, his results have gotten worse. So by my Total Biscuit math, he's actually helping the number one player in Britain become more complacent and shitty, which means Total Biscuit is the frat house of Bling. I just did that. That just happened that way. Bling before Total Biscuit, placing highly in WCG and winning major tournaments. Bling after Total Biscuit, dust in the wind. He's just dust in the fucking wind, Total Biscuit. But that doesn't fucking work that way. That would be a stupid thing to say. It would be even stupider if I said it like this. I believe they're running what's called a frat house, an American film-based action adventure where a bunch of guys live in the house together consuming alcoholic beverages and doing anything but professional lifestyle. We could do that math, Total Biscuit.
And Jeff has sufficiently thrown on the blue trunks.
All right, man.
I knocked out Total Biscuit in the red trunks.
It's a good segue into our next topic, actually. That's nothing. Nothing can really follow up that. I thought that was That's quite good. That just happened right there. That actually did just happen. Mind blown. Seriously. All right. The other thing that was kind of... Wait. Where'd it go? Oh, the Esports Management Group. LLC hits the scene this week. Esports has grown. We got management now. I don't know if you guys have heard about this,
yeah.
If you're aware. They have signed Tasteless. They have signed Clutch. They have signed Tasteless. They have signed Hotshot from Hotshot GG from Counterlogic Gaming. He's a League of Legends player, in case you guys didn't know that. Kind of a badass.
It's a big deal, I guess.
And the minds behind this were, are, rather. You can actually go to the About Us and meet our agents. So one guy you might actually recognize from the StarCraft II scene, Tumba. He did some broadcasting for MLG. And then he actually, I think for a while, was in charge of his beta or of the MLG beta streams, like getting casters, having people man them, et cetera. And Brian Balsbaugh and James Sullivan come from Brian from golf and then poker. James also as well helped out Brian, I believe, in his previous ventures. I'm not sure. I've not met John Arminio. But
a fucking strapping young lad.
Yeah. He looks like it looks like Sam from True Blood just a little bit, just a little tiny bit. But anyway, I mean, what do you guys think about this? It was kind of interesting to read the comments on it, from too soon. God damn it. You fucking dog housing kennel frat house sons of bitches over there.
Focus.
I mean, what the fuck? How the fuck do you expect me to do a show with you guys, let alone fucking train if there's fucking Poa barking in the background? All right. Anyway.
I'd answer the door, but there's too many beer cans in the way. And
it was like there's frankly, a giant pyramid. We've been working on it for like 10 weeks, man. Esports Management Group.
I think this is this was always going to happen with kind of, and again, I know I give too much credit to StarCraft II, but I guess with the professional level that is being raised by StarCraft II, I think player representation and kind of that middleman job area, I've been in contact with multiple people and organizations that were kind of circling around this idea. They're the first to really make it, in my opinion, at least in the StarCraft II space, really official. I know that it's probably... There's probably player representation in other games. I know that I talked to you, and you used to have some for CGS and stuff like that. So it's definitely been around, but it's kind of exciting. It's exciting in a way where it's like, where is this going to go? They're pathfinders, and they're going to be fighting against a fucking hill, man. Like, there's teams, there's organizations, there's leagues that don't want people representing players fighting for bigger salaries and, you know... more opportunities to interact and mingle with people with money at the end of the day. You know, that's pretty dangerous to a lot of teams and leagues and organizations. So there's going to be some pretty cool stuff kind of stirring up and around. And, I mean, initially signing a player like, or a commentator like Tasteless, and then, you know, Clutch is starting to make real big headway as a host. Those are big FaceTime guys. Like, we're definitely going to see where this goes, I think.
It's something that was bound to happen, just given, well, like just, I don't know anything about the past, if it's happened in the past and what scale, but it's something that's bound to happen on a big scale sooner or later, just because of the amount of money that's starting to move around. You see companies like CBS getting involved and whatnot. You don't negotiate an organization with an organization like that as a talent or as a player or whatever without representation. That'd just be silly. Like, we don't have the information necessary to make those decisions, and that's not really supposed to be our job anyway. We're supposed to sit around and play StarCraft or drink beer or whatever, not organize and negotiate contracts and whatnot. So yeah, it was kind of bound to happen just given the scale everything's approaching. And these guys are legitimate. I don't know if everyone's checked it out, but the Brian Balsbaugh guy, the Poker Royalties, I think it is.
Yeah, PokerRoyalty.com.
The agency he runs for poker, he has like Doyle Brunson, Daniel Negreanu, and other players of that caliber. So like, they're legit and big. I'm like kind of amazed he's actually getting into esports, just given the scale of that. Like, if he actually sees that much money in esports, That's really interesting to me.
So
where it goes, I don't really know.
I think the other big question here is, do you think it's going to make sort of some of the team managers at some of the other organizations like really maybe think about stepping up their game as far as, you know, how they're handling these types of things? I mean, I do continuously go back to Thorzane's interview on Live on 3 where he talked about one of the things that he saw from other teams but didn't feel like he got from Mouse Sports was kind of the exposure beyond just playing the game. And, you know, when I see a move like this, I really feel like that is one of the things that they're going to be targeting, is that the easy targets are within esports. You know, then it's like taking it beyond that and you know, catering to the already existing audience and attempting to grow that. And I assume that's kind of the direction that they want to take. But I ask you guys then that question. Do you feel like, you said yes, pain user, you feel like it's going to make teams and organizations maybe step up a little bit and you know, keep a close eye or rethink the way they're doing things?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think they're going to scale it in regards to what a management group like that would be doing and what a team like EG would be doing. I mean, Mao's losing Thorzane already is a huge hit to their organization, and I'm sure something that they're not particularly happy about, and I think the aftermath of that will cause them to step up those sort of outside-the-game promotional ventures that a team like EG does very well, promoting their players outside of the game. So I think everybody's going to have to step up their game proportionally, unless they want to start losing players to a team like EG or perhaps losing players to a management group if they go independent and sign with a group like that in order to get promoted that way.
There's two big things that could come of this. One is just the representation, the agency side of things, whereas it's going to be harder for tournaments and teams to take advantage of players. Because like I said, most of us don't have a lot of the information that's out there and don't know how to access it. And we also don't spend the time on the business side of things that is the entirety of what the teams and the management do. So we get taken advantage of in terms of negotiation, or at least a lot of players do, not all of us. And so it'll help that if they're actually representing you in those negotiations. And then the other thing is exposing you to other teams. EG players don't really have a problem with that because EG is almost an agency in and of itself. Like, we put out just a ton of content. They're great at giving us exposure and getting us out there, getting our personalities out there, and making sure that we get money for it. And, like, they grow us as brands along with themselves as the EG brand. So they're great about that. But other teams, like you said, Mouse Sports, they're just – all the European teams are pretty fucking terrible about using their players for anything other than playing in tournaments and team leagues. So that is where this thing will be really, really good for esports in general. You get a lot of these players who could be stars out there. They aren't because they don't have the way to make it happen.
Well,
they don't have support.
No one's written that book either. That's why it's kind of interesting to have guys who have experience in sort of budding industries, in this case poker, as many of the comparisons that have been made even in their press releases that the state of esports right now is very similar to how it was in poker, where there's a lot of talent, a lot of personalities. It's not necessarily a super winningest like talent pool either. I mean, you have talent who's all won, but you know, getting repeat championships, titles in poker is probably more difficult than StarCraft II. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But anyway. I keep an eye on it, as I'm sure they're going to be going after additional teams, players, personalities, etc. And it's kind of interesting to see exactly where it's going to go.
All eyes will be on them because right now they're the only ones doing it. And if they do a good job, 10 companies will follow up behind it. If they get absolutely slaughtered and tuck their tails and disappear forever, that concept may be years away again.
They could be paving the way. You're absolutely right, which could mean a bridge that many people cross or one that falls apart the first time they send a truck across.
I doubt it's going to fall apart, though. I think they have a reasonably good odds at success.
It's definitely going to be intriguing to see what happens over the next few months. I'll tell you what, guys, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? And when we come back, we're gonna open up the phone lines. I know you're disgusted, Idra, but we're gonna open up the phone lines. See what you guys have to say about everything that we've talked about tonight, or anything that might be on your mind. So stick around. More Inside the Game coming at you here in just a moment. Don't go away.
All right, we're back for our second hour of Inside the Game. And this hour we're going to open up the phone lines to all you fine individuals out there. But before we do, I want to give a friendly reminder. There's a couple of people asking about previous episodes. And I'm not sure who created this wiki, but if it was 12th Doctor, thank you, sir. There's an Inside the Game wiki where it actually lists all of the VODs, the actual length, everything that...
Crazy good.
Yeah, everything that you'd want to know about Inside the Game, but too afraid to ask. You'll see that it stops there on MP3s around 26, hoping to fix that very, very soon. We apologize to all you folks out there who bootleg the MP3s so you can listen to it, but we appreciate the fact that you bootleg the shit out of it. Please continue to do so. Welcome back, Pain User.
Yo.
We're going to open up phone lines. You can dial us via Skype, DJ Wheat, or telephone 909-581-8519. Anything and everything is
boom
is up for grabs. You guys ready, man?
Let's do it.
They're already pouring in, man. All right, we've got John A. as caller number one to Inside the Game. Hello, sir. Welcome to the program. What's up?
Holy shit. Two shows in a row. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hello.
What's up, dude?
You're quick on the trigger. How's it going, man?
As soon as you mentioned Fane's Wheat, I just hammered the button repeatedly. Yeah, not bad. So a couple of things tonight. Wanted to comment a bit harshly, perhaps, do a bit of a character assassination on fucking Turtle Biscuit, because he does my head in. How the guy can even publicly criticize anyone in the world just amazes me, since he's the worst person ever for receiving criticism. Like, you know, I mean, it's all been said, I suppose, but, you know, any thread or post anywhere in the world that mentions anything negatively about him is replied to with a lot of rage.
Right. Well, so. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm actually a fan of rage, in case no one knew that. But, you know, I definitely feel like, or calling someone out, but I definitely feel like you have to have some grounds. And, you know, that's why I wanted to ask the guys tonight anyway. But what's your question, Johnny?
So I wanted to ask Idra if I could. I mean, you've obviously had a lot of problems with your performance lately, certainly this year. Well, we know you've been seeing, a sports psychologist and kind of trying to change your play style a bit in certainly versus Prezels and stuff. What do you think your major problems are that you have to overcome, really? You know, is it that people have kind of figured you out, you know, they've kind of pinned you, immediately they get into the game, go, macro game, you know, and just exploit the shit out of it? Or what's your thought process for kind of overcoming your problems?
Well, there's a bunch of things that kind of stacked up. At the end of last year, I was on a two-month or so run of tournaments just straight out, almost zero practice, like almost literally zero practice between them. And that kind of thing really just destroys your play. Not only do you actually just deteriorate, your mechanics get worse, but you also fall behind the metagame because you're not studying and you're not keeping up with everyone else. So that hurt me a lot. And then because of that, I lost a bunch of tournaments. And confidence, like any competitive player will tell you, the confidence in getting on a roll and believing in yourself and believing that you can win is almost as important as actually just being good at whatever you do. So that started like a whole big downward spiral. Lost confidence, started playing worse. You know, felt negatively about the game and about my performance, which didn't help. And so then it became a process of trying to turn that around. And I'm in the middle of that. I'm playing very well right now. I feel like I'm playing the best I ever have, and I'm figuring things out about the game. And I felt like MLG Anaheim was supposed to be where I came back and started playing well. Then I had a bunch of problems with the scheduling and whatnot. There was lots of outside impact, lots of outside influences on my performance at tournament, so I didn't feel that was really representative. But yeah, just all of that. And it's turning around now, and I'll win something soon.
Well, I hope you do, man, to be honest, because it'd be good to see you back on form, to be honest.
All right. Well, Johnny, thank you for your call. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Have a good one, man. Take care. All right. One down. And I promise, Pain User, we'll talk TVZ. We're going to take a phone call. We got area code 619 on the phone. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, wait. I wanted to ask a question to you, actually. There's been a lot of talk recently about how StarCraft II might be pushing to get shown on television. And as, like, an esports historian, I've been around a long time, too, and doesn't it feel like every time an eSport gets shown on television and then fails, that it almost effectively kills the eSport? You did it with DOA, with Counter-Strike, you know, FIFA even.
I would say more than the games that got killed. As far as CGS is concerned, it's more, I think, the bigger detriment was the fact that they ran away their sponsors, you know, just from not succeeding and just spending a lot of money. I mean, I still am very much in the opinion of the way that U.S. traditional television works is that it makes it very difficult to show something like an eight-hour tournament and monetize that properly with the way that you'd need to do it in sort of this day and age. But online streaming is obviously not hindering anyone from showing it in bars, you know, at bar crafts or by watching it on their television at home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, I think that there's going to be a risk of not necessarily killing the game, because I feel like our games are much stronger than Counter-Strike Source at the time and DOA. I mean, you know, FIFA, maybe that one can be argued.
Quake 3?
Well, I mean, Quake, they only showed Quake one time on CGS. But I think that that game would have been good for television, but it just wasn't used. So, I mean, I don't know. In this day and age, I don't think that we need to push for anything on television, at least in North America.
All right, thank you.
Yep, take care, man. Bye. All right. Take another one. We're going to take this guy right here. We can take Zach. Zach, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going, man.
I was just wondering. I know a lot of people kind of criticize casters sometimes for saying things about players that might be too harsh. Like in tournaments, a lot of casters, I think this was one of the subjects on an earlier show, is that the casters will say, oh, that player made a huge mistake. Do you guys think that players get too much crap for not succeeding in a competitive environment that casters might not have, and because they don't have the experience in a competitive environment that they might be overly critical of that? Like Total Biscuit said, oh, EG hasn't had enough success lately. Is it because he's never experienced that area?
Well, let's go back to the original question, which was kind of the
our caster's too harsh.
Yeah, our caster's too harsh. Pain user and in control. I mean, obviously, you guys most recently have been prominent casters. What do you think?
I think they can be for sure, and I think it's definitely a problem of mine. But for me, a lot of times it'll come from a place of having previous competitive experience or knowing that player and what they're capable of, and just kind of being harsh on them in that light, in that I know that they're capable of better, or I've seen that they're capable of better, and I'll chastise someone or rail them out if they make something that I deem like a clear-cut mistake. But either way, I think that having that previous experience playing competitively and knowing what they go through and how much preparation and effort is put into every single match and how critical it is, I think I personally need to be way less harsh on them in those situations and try and spin it into like a positive light. You know, maybe what they could have done here may have been a little bit better, and try and stay out of the more critical analysis. And I know that's like something that I want to work on in my own casting. And I think all casters should try and be less critical of that. And when someone like a Total Biscuit, for instance, or like an HD StarCraft makes a comment about, you know, oh, Idrid totally fucked up here, he made a huge mistake, it's like, well, you don't really know what goes into that mistake and what's actually behind it. So I think it's a little bit unfair of them to make comments like that, but I don't know. It's my two cents.
Go ahead, Greg, sorry.
The only time it really bothers me is, like Taylor said, when it's someone like HD or Total Biscuit, who's not an analytical caster at all, doesn't really know anything about the game, it will actually criticize a decision that's pretty subjective. Like, Not if you just make a huge blunder. If you, like, move command your army into their army, then that's obviously a mistake. Then go ahead and say that. But when it's actually a strategical decision, there's lots of different things that go into it. There might be information that they don't recognize. For them to then make a comment on that and be, like, very boisterous about, oh, that was fucking terrible. Why the hell would he do that? That's pretty stupid, because a lot of the times they're just wrong or they don't understand what's going on. But on the whole, being critical of players, that's okay. It's to be expected. Like, this is our job. We're supposed to be good at it. If we make mistakes, yeah, call us on it. Like, that's part of what being a caster is. But then I'll let Jeff talk about it, because what he'll say is about how awesome Artosis is about turning it around and doing it the proper way.
I mean, I'll give credence to that real quick, because I want to talk about something I'd call the underlying issue, too. But what Artosis does, and I always give the spiel, as Greg said, but, like, he does such a good job of being a really... I mean, there's a reason why a lot of people consider him the best commentator, and that's because when he sees a mistake or when he sees players playing, he tells the story from the perspective of, like, it's exciting, or, like, he's making a mistake because his opponent is forcing him to make mistakes because he's applying pressure over here. Like, that narrative is a whole lot more engaging than a couple of guys getting really upset at what they deem a terrible decision, a terrible thing.
I agree.
And, yep. And that happens, so that's going to feed into my underlying issue I have, which is that if you're a commentator and you are aware of this issue and you're striving to be more positive, then I think you're ahead of the game. Because I think the underlying issue, and this is something that a player like an Apollo or even DJ Weed or some of these guys would limelight the counterexample to, is that they're not prepared. Like, they go into a match and they're just like, I'm just going to watch some StarCraft and I'm going to commentate on both these things. So it's really easy for them to look at a situation and be like, well, that's wrong and that's wrong and I think this is right. But they're not looking at the history of, okay, this player does this on that map because he feels this is, like, the best timing against that player, which is a really cool narrative, which is things that Apollo brings to the table that makes him one of the best commentators today. So if you're aware of the fact that you tend to be overly negative because you don't have other things to say, then try as best you can to work against that. Because, like, Pain User admitted, he has a problem with that. I myself have a problem with that. The more commentating I do, it's easy for me for you guys to hear me say this, but then watch one of my commentaries and be like, well, actually, In Control can tend to be pretty critical, and that's something that I'm working against, because I want to be the kind of Artosis commentator that, like, I know what's the right or wrong decision, or at least I have a pretty good idea of it, but it's rather than spending my time asserting myself above them and being like, well, I know so much more, I want to educate the masses, entertain the masses, but also talk up the player, because it does nobody any service to make it sound like they're a big idiot. It makes the game look uglier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys think that's, I mean, just because of a lack of experience, like in Total Biscuit's case? Because you said Apollo, who is a higher level player and who has those experiences, is less critical of that decision.
To actually, like, make those... To be that kind of commentator, you actually have to understand what's going on and what the right decision is and what the wrong decision is and what would cause you to make the right decision. Like, Artosis was a competitive player for a long time and plays StarCraft II at a pretty high level still. So he can actually do that. He has the information necessary to then make those explanations and arguments. Total Biscuit just doesn't. That's not what he does. He's a play-by-play. He's got to get you excited. He's not supposed to be making those analytical analysis one way or the other.
I think he does try a lot, too, like, in situations where it's, like, not really,
which is
necessary
really weird.
Or applicable.
Like, if you call him out on that in public, he'll be like, yeah, I'm not an analytical caster. I'm not supposed to do that, and I'm fine with it. This is what I do. But then he goes ahead and he tries to make those decisions, like, those calls anyway, which I find kind of annoying.
All right, Zach,
yeah, and to get a little bit away from, like, the bashing out, I guess what I would say, too, is, like, what Total Biscuit brings to the table and has more experience than anybody else is, like, broadcasting. So when he gets excited and he's conveying what everyone sees and knows, but he's doing it in a really excitable and eloquent fashion, there's very few people that bring that much excitement to the table that Total Biscuit does. So that's why it's a little bit sad when he gets away from that and talks over his co-commentators, usually an analytical guy, and starts wrongfully criticizing a player when that should be the analytical commentator's job. To a certain extent.
All right.
I think that's what a lot of the YouTube casters bring to the table, too, is they just have that excitability, and they can really convey emotion in the way that they speak very well. I think that's definitely a strong point for all the YouTube casters.
And I'm not sure why it keeps on coming back to TB, because, you know, honestly, there's a lot of people that suffer there, myself included.
It's It's because he's, like, the best at what he does, so it's the same thing. Like, EG gets criticized most because we're the most public and we get the most attention. He gets the most attention, so when it's negative, he still gets the most attention.
Sure. I mean, I guess it helps when the callers specifically call up and, like, are attacking in that fashion.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds bad because we keep naming, but honestly, like Greg said, he's really fucking good at play-by-play, man. He knows broadcasting, and he hosts
absolutely
amazingly well. So when he strays away from that, just like we deserve criticism for lack of winning everything, you know, same thing for him.
All right, we ready for more? We'll take another phone call. Area code 360, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Yeah.
Holy shit, it's calling from the moon.
Yeah, I can't hear him.
He called it from the past, and then he hung up. How do I use this thing called the telephone? And I just dialed this number on and tried to fucking talk to him.
200 years ago, help me.
All right, let's take area code 416. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, Wheat, how's it going?
It's going good, man. How are you?
I'm good. So basically, my question is for Pain User, I guess, because he wanted to talk about it, but I want to talk about TVZ.
Okay, TVZ. See, Pain User, just hold your fucking horses, man. Someone's going to call in eventually.
Oh, like I haven't been patient, Wheat. Get out of here.
All right, go ahead, caller.
I mean, realistically, in both matchups of TVZ and TVP, I'm getting owned right now. And I'll blame it on the fact that I just came from Diablo. Like, I've been playing way too much Diablo 3.
Likewise.
But I came back, and I feel like I'm behind in the metagame, and I don't know what to do TVZ, because I used to just go very heavy on the Helliant early game.
Have you uninstalled Diablo yet?
I don't play it anymore.
Okay.
I don't like it. I just...
Okay. And you know what? You won't have any problems uninstalling that shit, man.
I stopped playing as well.
Do we need to do a step-by-step process right now? Just, you know?
Sounds like me and this guy have a lot in common.
Control panel.
I definitely just stopped playing.
Okay.
I'd like to point out that the two Terran players here, you know, they go and play Diablo, and then they come back to play about balance, whereas Zerg and the Protoss were sitting here practicing the entire time. Obvious reason.
That's fine. I actually don't complain about
lack of dedication.
I don't really mind
it. It's
just, I feel like I'm behind the meta game.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that you are. I feel like a lot of the high level Codex Terran Koreans are still using
TPZ.
Yeah, they're still not necessarily. They are still using the Hellion into Banshee into triple orbital openers into dual eBay. And then adding a bunch of Raxes after that and trying to pressure with, like, four Hellions and a Banshee or two Banshees. But I feel like with the added range on the Queens, and I don't think that this is necessarily the issue at hand because everybody bitches about the Queen range being added. That helps them hold off the early Hellions and the Banshees and take less damage from it. But I think that the Queen range change was just the catalyst in Zerg players making... Four to six queens.
Yeah.
And realizing, oh, holy shit, we can creep across, you know, almost the entire map by the 13-14 minute mark. I'll have creep encroaching on my third from time to time against,
it
like,
does make a huge difference against Hellions, I'll say that, though. Like,
it really does.
It is the catalyst. They are giving more attention to it, but specifically Hellion openings, queens become a really fucking good counter. Whereas in the past, with two less range, they were like, they survived, kind of, but they weren't, like, a counter to Hellions, I don't think.
Yeah, and there was still the possibility of, like, running by the Queens and doing damage at the natural or slipping into the main and doing damage, but the sustained DPS of three or four Queens with the added range just takes out Hellions relatively quickly now, so it's a lot harder to do damage. But anyway, I struggle a lot in managing the creep, and then also, like, your first push, if it gets annihilated or if they even trade evenly... and then get close to a remax after that, I find it very, very difficult to beat a Zerg that has really good macro. I don't know. Greg, maybe you have a different opinion on the matter.
There's two ways to approach it. You can either be, like, really, really aggressive early on. Like, a big part of the thing is Zergs are getting away with being really greedy, and Terran's like, oh, shit, Queens. I can't attack him anymore. I can't run by him with the Hellions anymore. And Zergs are getting away with being greedy. But more often than not, if you take those first four Hellions and you actually just try and run by... once the Zerg has taken the third, because usually Zerg has taken a third, and they have their four Queens down below the ramp by the time you have four, six Hellions. You actually just run by. Zergs don't make spines anymore. They don't make more than two Lings until, like, 50, 60 supply. You can usually get in and actually kill drones. So there's a big mindset thing there. And then there's also a little specifically designed builds like FastCC, Command Center First, or RexCC into a little biopoke that hits before Zerglings come out, and you get the four queens, and you can either take them out and force Zerglings or whatever. Really low investment kind of pressure that you can apply before the time it kicks in. And the other thing is, you see those four queens, that's 600 minerals invested in a slow-ass defensive unit. You're not going to get attacked for the next 5 minutes if you see four queens. So put down a third orbital, get up to starport, and put down two engineering bays, and then go into the mid-game in much better shape than you're supposed to. A lot of Terrans right now are either cheesing, or they're going really, really greedy into heavy bio play, and then start mixing in mass air later on. And those seem to be the proper way to play. But the biggest thing is really Terrans have just been so afraid early on, and yet not changing their builds, still just making like six Hellions, but then being too afraid to do anything. So that's 600 minerals down the drain. That's not really doing anything. It's kind of slowing down crate spread, which then happens anyway. Like, Terrans are just trying to stick to the old meta game when it clearly doesn't work. And the ones that are adapting, they're doing okay. Like, if you look at GSL, I think all four Zergs went out last night. There's only five Zergs that advanced in the into the top 16. There's seven Terrans or something. Like, Terrans doing pretty okay on the top level if you look at the Terrans who are actually adapting and responding to the new style of play.
DJ Wheat?
Yes, sir.
Get out your pen and notebook, because this is a monumental fucking day.
I've got it right here, man.
About four episodes ago, no, about 40 episodes ago, there was one time where Greg and I had a certain debate about Protoss versus Zerg, and I brought up an example of reasons why there may have been an imbalance in the matchup. Greg, I'm going to... You talked about the GSL, my friend. I'm still watching you. Still watching you, Greg.
Okay. Should I write that part down?
You know what happens, though?
I remember this.
Keep writing this down, DJ Wade.
Okay,
this is good.
I'm still going.
We grow older. We get more mature. We get smarter. We get wiser. It just so happens that Greg is just now on my level. What's up?
Stand by.
That's it.
No, I was actually saying in the future when Protoss had 75% win rate when we were having that discussion.
Up. Jeff, hold on. I'm also noting your actions. That Jeff
it was
statically
like a
power throws arms into the air and
like a
fist
motion.
Pumps.
Okay. All right, you're going to have to break it down for our audience, Jeff. I don't think anybody...
Here's the side angle of it. It goes
remembering back 40 episodes ago.
Out. So it's like a cheerleader thing, but it's more like Power Ranger.
Nice. Nice. Well, Idra just broke it down. I guess I'd throw out the same question, like, because obviously this has been a hot topic, TVZ. Idra, as a Zerg player, do you feel like your T is, like, at a strong point of its game right now just because of the way that Terrans are playing? No. What the fuck are you laughing
Greg
at?
Smiling, and that makes me so
okay,
happy. That's
okay.
All.
I think Greg understood what I was trying to ask, but
I kind of understand where Greg was going with the saying that the first six Hellions are a huge investment and they don't really do much, but I feel like without those Hellions on the map and without that small shred of map control, you can't see all-ins coming. The Hellions are like essential for seeing the roaches coming across the map and stuff like that.
If they're doing the creep build, which is what everyone complains about, the four forward queens, they're not going to attack you. You can't afford it. That's a lot of money, and you usually go gasless to open up with that. Like, you're not going to get attacked if you see that many queens. If you don't see that many queens, then it's the exact same as it was before in the patch, and it's, like, not a big deal at all.
I think you can get attacked
if you make six queens, you're not going to attack. It just doesn't work.
Six, yeah.
But I think four queens would definitely
still be an all-in.
But four queens isn't the thing everyone complains about. People complain about the four forward queens, like two macro queens and the four forward queens. Think about how many stars of that. No one's going to fucking attack off that. It doesn't happen.
I agree with that on the six.
Can't afford it. I don't know why this is a debate.
It's not because if Terrans weren't so goddamn greedy wanting to drop mules all the time, they could spend one scan down and see what the fuck is coming, right? Like, just choose a spot.
Yeah.
Reveal
I do like
that
Greg
shit,
said, though,
man.
Like, it's a lot of people get pretty quick, like Ravens is the buzzword whenever, and Nidus Worm used to be the one for Zerg, like, when Zerg was struggling, people were like, try out Nidus Worms, and Zerg's like, don't fucking, if you say Nidus Worm one more time, and now it's Terrans, and it's like, TVZ is really hard, and everyone's like, well, try out Ravens, and they're like, if you say Ravens one more time, But honestly, what Greg said makes sense. Like, if you open up six Hellions, which is what Terrans did, because back in the metagame for that time was like, it was either four Hellions, or it was double reactor, here comes 20 Hellions, and you better goddamn well have SimCityed your bases. Like, I remember when Zergs were shaking in their boots.
Yeah.
Because Hellions were like this conundrum that they didn't understand.
It's like, what is this foreign object in the game killing everything?
So what's being exploited now is that it turns out six Hellions are actually not that scary. Like, Zerglings on creep have an opportunity to surround them if the Terran's not looking for a second. Queens themselves can push out that creep and do damage to Hellions without... like, if they lose creep tumors, who cares? They have four queens designated to spreading creep. So, like, you can kill 20 creep tumors. They're still going to get that fucking creep out. So... changing the builds, but like Greg said, identifying that 600 minerals of Hellions down the drain, you shouldn't be ahead after that. You shouldn't be on par with them after that. Like, you need to do something with that or respond to them. So there's things that need to be adjusted and looked at. And the best Terrans on the planet, the GSL Terrans, they are doing okay. Like, they're advancing a lot. That's not proof that the matchup's okay. It's proof that the matchup's in flux. And the people that are working on it the hardest are the ones that are going to get rewarded right now. And that's not a way that, like, that came out wrong. I guess that's, oh my God, the forums are going to say, like, they're not working hard enough. I'm sorry, you are working hard enough. Like, at the end of the day, what we're going to find is probably no balance patch. And in a couple of weeks, maybe a month, maybe long, maybe this is one of the longest droughts ever, it will start to circle back. And I just
win 60% like they have for the rest of StarCraft II history.
There's that comment, Greg. They're going to jump on you for that one. I appreciate you saving me.
Pounce!
But at the end of the day, like, do listen to what Greg just said and take that advice. And even if you think it's stupid, it's never going to work, like, experiment with it and try it. Because at the end of the day, like, I was one of the balance complainers, man. I fucking did that, okay? I sat and cried and felt terrible for months. And it doesn't actually do anything for you.
No.
It doesn't really do anything at all. So continue to work, continue to experiment, listen to what Greg says when he talks about, like, reasons what Terrans can do differently, and then watch some of these GSLs, man. Stay up.
Yeah,
check out the VODs, like, get ideas and experiment off that stuff.
I've been watching all of them, and, like, none of the Terrans are really experimenting with anything new. They're kind of doing
are talking about people are talking about Jakji last night's Code A, which I know it's Code A, right? But it's Gruden over there.
Well, Code A or Code, like, there's a very small difference between them.
There is nowadays. Jakji and Monster.
Who's Code B now? Spoiler.
Oh, my God.
Did I just spoil it for you, Wheat?
No, I don't.
Entire day.
Except for, like, finals and stuff. I can't QQ about it anymore.
No.
So, all right, caller. Thank you very much for your call. Hopefully that gives you some insight.
Could I ask one quick question?
Are you guys attending
the NASL?
My mom is getting married that week, and I will not be there.
No?
I guess that's enough.
Okay, thank you very much for your call.
Thanks, man.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yep, thanks.
Oh, No.
We've got unknown phone number. Welcome to Inside
the
Game.
He's my favorite.
Mysterious man or woman on the other end of the phone. Hello. Yes. Oh, yes. I'm excited for this. Hello, sir or ma'am.
We've never had a female caller.
On the line. Yeah, we have. Yeah, sure. I'm not hanging up until I hear words from you. Take the phone off mute. And talk to us, damn it.
Please.
Apollo 13.
Damn it. Oh, sorry,
my mic muted.
Oh, hello.
I was talking all that time. I was asking a question to all of you about PVZ and what you feel about the late game, how it comes down to one neuroparasite.
Oh, wait, hold on. You said that with such conviction. Let's all talk about how the late game comes down to a single neuroparasite, which, by the way, I'll be trying, because if I don't win after casting a single neuroparasite, then you can go fuck yourself. Please explain, because I know that it doesn't just stop right there.
Well, late game, PVZ, it's usually always for the Zerg, Reload, and Infestors, right? And then to counteract the Broodlords, Protoss get the Mothership and Arkhams, and... a lot of the times the game can come down to if they hit the neuroparasite. And I was going to ask what you think about that.
Oh, first off, I thought you said TVZ, So I was like, is the Zerg neuropariciting that's
Thanks.
Deciding the game?
Everyone knows that.
I totally kind of, well, if he thinks it's a bad thing, in which case I totally agree with him. I think that any game coming down to that point where you've put in, you know, so much time, and the same can be said for ultra late game TVP as well. I think a prime example was with MVP and Squirtle, I believe, where he tried to go BCs in the late game with 3-3 upgrades and ended up losing just over half of them to a single Vortex. And then also, if the Zerg gets off a single Neural Parasite and ends up using the Vortex on the Protoss, I just think any game situation from a development standpoint where both these players have invested 40-plus minutes into a game, it's coming down to the wire, and you have one unit with so much importance that literally the entire apex of the game comes down to using like those two abilities and how effective they are on the mothership. I just think that that's a little bit ridiculous. I don't think that it's too powerful.
The obvious change.
Yeah, I don't think that it's too powerful for Protoss. That's not what I'm saying at all, Jeff. I'm just saying that that being in as a gameplay mechanic, I think it's flawed just from the standpoint that like the Protoss has to do that or he loses, I think is just stupid. Like Protoss should have other options than having to rely on the mothership and getting 6+ broodlords in a vortex. Like there should be something else for them to do.
Ironically, running simultaneously with the Inside the Game broadcast is the IPL TAC between Team Liquid and Prime. And Hero just closed out a 45-50 minute PVZ against On Young Prime, where it was anything but just a single vortex to decide the match. So while I do agree there is a tendency that the matchup is completely determined between a mothership getting off its vortex and then Archon toileting the Broodlord army or not, there are other ways to play it. You can use speed warp prisms to harass and abuse the lack of mobility from the Zerg. And what Greg would tell you and what we've talked about in the past is what a good Zerg is supposed to do is literally never attack, make something like 65 spine crawlers and 35 spore crawlers, and make Broodlords, Corruptors, and Infestors. And just literally absorb all the money from the map, from the Protoss, like as they attack over and over again. And that's what On Young Prime did. So it doesn't. It can make for an exciting. Oh, Hero lost that match?
Yeah, I know. I just saw that. I don't know what happened. I can't imagine.
Is that actually possible?
I didn't think so.
No. Stream chat, you sultry beast.
No. I'm still watching the match. It's Teja versus On Young now. On Young won.
I have no soul.
On Young won.
This world is broken. You need more motherships. You should take off the cap on motherships. They should have range 32 on the vortex. Archons should be able to blink. And I'm sick and tired of broodlords. They should actually have to They should have to C-section their broodlings, and eventually it becomes too much. They can't take it. The duress of the C-sections is too much, and they just collapse on themselves and they die. And then the spine crawlers, when they move in the wind like little carrot tops walking across the map, they should just fucking go away. Like they should just decide to dig into the ground and pop up in Beetlejuice land where they turn into those worms in the fucking sand. That's what should happen, inspired by Dune. I don't give a shit about PvZ late game. Try to kill those bitches on three bases. You can't kill them on three bases. It's fucking over, man. Get out of the game.
Apparently they actually proved the caller's point because Hero just left because he missed a vortex. Like he was running around doing everything right all game, and then he missed the vortex, so On Young won.
My pocket abacus. I added up. we got Zergs, and then the white one will be Protoss. And then the black one's going to be the Zerg winning because they fucking won. And I counted it up, did the math.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Christ.
This is too much. Right. I still believe, okay? Fucking angels in the outfield. You can do that battle, man. Heroes, still possible.
I'm with you.
I believe.
I'm with you.
Well, apart from Jeff's serious suggestion, what other ways do you think of beating it as a Protoss? Like, because I'm stuck in the matchup completely.
The matchup is supposed to suck. Like, the optimal way for both players to play, if expansion timings are right and everything, is mass speed prism running into a wall against mass spine crawlers and spore crawlers, and then Zerg has to kind of, like, fuck up and give Protoss a good vortex. Otherwise, you just keep making spines and absorb the map. And that's, like, a 2.5-hour game every time, and it's just fucking terrible and boring, and Blizzard's retarded.
Okay.
So yeah,
thank you.
There is no help. Like, as people get better, the game is going to get worse because that's the way it's supposed to be played.
It's your job to figure it out. We need you. Thank you, sir, for your call. Have a good one. It's time for another. It's time for another call. You know, I think this guy called in earlier, failed badly. I want to give him another chance. We got area code 360. Welcome to Inside the Game. Hello.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
This is it.
I've been... Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead. What's your question?
All right, so just like every other Terran, I've been struggling with TVZ for a while, and I was like on the low end of high masters, and I started dipping down. So I spent like a week practicing TVZ, and now it's my best matchup. I have like 70% win rate, but now my PvP and PvT have gone to shit. And I'm just wondering what you guys do to try to keep your matchups pretty even, because right now I'm like 70%, 30%, 30%.
Play all of them.
Yeah, try and find a good practice partner or a few good practice partners in each matchup with different play styles, like preferably one that's pretty good at macro style and one that might be like a little more timing based, and then you can just kind of work your matchup circumspect. Just train all of them on different maps.
Playing all races is hard, man.
And I mean, success rates on different success rates.
If you play just Terran, that's how much you can play with just Terran. When you play Protoss as well, it's like this because you got to split your time, okay? But then when you play Zerg, it's like this. Now look at that. Look at how your time split between the three. Notice how it's three little beads.
All right. I know that really doesn't help, but I think they said it best. You just kind of got to keep up with the other matchups. So thank you for your call, sir.
Hating on my different ways of teaching.
All right. That guy walked away with nothing. He walked away. He's more confused now. You fucked him up so bad, he's going to start losing his TVZs now. And he's going to be like 30-30-30.
That fucking abacus.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out, by the way. That abacus was a gift from Azale, the Masters Cup commentator who we're going to be commentating this weekend with. And we talked about this. We did a broadcast where we talked about how some piece of shit somewhere had a pocket abacus. And I was like, I need that. I want that. And he's like, I will find it.
And
then
did.
I came home. And
that's nice.
One.
All right, here we go. Another call. We've got Chris on the line. Hello, Chris. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello. My question is essentially sort of aimed at everybody here. And I'm curious to know, with the sort of this release of players going to the sort of not teams anymore, or potentially not going to teams anymore, what you feel will happen in team dynamics with the development of new teams?
Are you Scottish?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Is that relevant to your answer?
I was kind of hoping he'd yell at us with that question.
Okay, sorry, my sound completely died there for a second. Yes, no, I am. I am Scottish, yeah.
Good man.
So, I'm not sure I understand your question.
I think he means the new management organizations, but like that is a substitute to teams?
Yeah.
No, what I particularly meant, because my sound went and I lost my train of thought, with the team management... not team management, with the player managements coming out. And new teams, how do you feel that new teams trying to develop themselves, as we see a lot of teams going under, such as OGS, new teams that will be coming out, will they find it harder to be developed as a brand and to find sponsorships when big sponsors such as Monster and all that kind of stuff, SteelSeries, can then choose to, instead of sponsoring a whole team, they can just find an individual player they wish to sponsor, which will be more cost-effective for them, potentially?
Well, right, but I mean, like, hold on. You can't necessarily make a statement like that and not look at what could be more cost-effective, which is an entire team of players.
Yeah.
I wasn't generalizing. I'm saying that that was a rather large generalization, but what I mean is, potentially, they can not pay less, But I imagine a lot of the larger sponsors are paying a lot of money. And for new up-and-coming teams, players may not want to be part of a team dynamic when they know they could, well, not know, but they could potentially be sponsored individually.
No player who can get a legitimate sponsorship individually would join an entry-level team anyway. It's just, like, not relevant. No sponsor will take on Joe Blow 29, and White Raw is not going to join the new team. So that's not really relevant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the other thing that teams offer, too, that are... I mean, it's nice to think of, like, a grubby situation where you get the bigger dollar sign, but you have to have a team that, or at least people working with you, like a Cassandra in Grubby's case, where they're going to help manage you. You need people that are going to buy you tickets and travel you and let you focus on playing. So it sounds nice to have personal sponsors and stuff like that. In a lot of situations, you can make it work, but if you don't have people around you taking care of the things that your team would otherwise take care of you, you'll find that you're literally getting more money, but you're paying for it with your time and your happiness, essentially.
For sure, but...
And in... An individual player isn't necessarily more cost efficient because, like, yeah, you have to pay them less. But a team like EG, the reason EG has so much more money than everyone else is because we actually have this big group of players and they take advantage of all of us and put out a lot of content. And a player is not going to be able to utilize himself as well as EG can utilize us. So it's not nearly as valuable to the sponsor, even if you only have to pay for one person instead of the whole group. So
I sort of agree with where he's coming from in regards to a team that. Like, there's no doubt that entry-level teams are not on that level. Like, no really good player that's capable of garnering a sponsor would join an entry-level team. But that being said, I think it will be harder for entry-level teams that are trying to break that threshold, and they might just be right on the level where they could, you know, pick up sponsors. I think they're going to be losing players much more frequently, and it's going to be much harder for them to actually establish themselves within the community as a pro team. With all the new management organizations and, you know, like teams like Quantic and EG and Complexity all solidifying themselves more and more and more and getting bigger name sponsors. I think it's just going to be harder as esports grows as a whole for entry-level teams to break through in the scene.
That's the way it's supposed to be, though. Like, we're supposed
to... Yeah,
we want a core of, like, good, competent, professional teams who really know what they're doing, really have a lot of money flowing through the scene.
I totally agree.
You don't have a new football team every season. That would be really bad. That would be unstable. Like, we want a big group. Well, not a big group, but we want a group of teams who are established and who do get all the big sponsors and who do put down the lesser, the inferior, the people who don't know what they're doing when it comes to running a team. And if you actually know what you're doing, if you're actually good at pulling in a sponsor and whatnot, then either you're good enough that you can make it work on your own, because we aren't that solidified yet. There's a lot of teams who don't really know what they're doing, who are kind of in the upper echelon. Or you go to work for a team like EG, your competence is noticed, you get promoted, you get more responsibility, and you do your thing that way.
Yeah.
I think everyone's getting the root of the issue that Greg's getting at.
Jesus
what?
Christ.
Oh.
You should have kept that one to yourself.
That would take a second.
I think people like to glamorize it a bit. That's how I'm going to acknowledge that one, Jeff. I think that people like to glamorize it a little bit. It's definitely not as black and white as – and I know that you don't mean – and I'm sure you're not assuming that it is. But believe me, a lot of people believe that it is that black and white. I don't think it's easier for a player to be independent in this world. I think that right now the team dynamic is allowing a lot of players that would otherwise not be able to compete in a lot of different events compete. And, you know, you can't take that away when suddenly on your back is all your travel, all your hotel, potentially stay, you know, everything else that comes in between. That can be a large burden. So, you know, something to think about and consider. But I don't think anyone can make that judgment call too soon, Chris. So thank you for your call, though. Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks for your time.
Bye. Smagasins. I like this guy's name.
That's an awesome name. It's like Schmegma, but also...
Smagasins. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game, Smagasins.
Hi. I was just wondering, in the Real Talk thread, or show with JP, Total Biscuit brought up the idea of a way to increase sponsors' ROI on players, and how to get the player sponsors out there more. I was wondering if you guys have any thoughts on how that could happen.
What exactly?
You mean like more endorsements?
Like, hang on there with me. Like, if players would start doing, like, commercials or, you know, like, interviews where they give shout-outs to their sponsors, like Intel, Kingston HyperX, SteelSeries, Monster, Sapphire, that would be good exposure.
That was well played in Control. One of the ways that was brought up is in Dota 2.
They have
there's
banners on the back of them with their sponsors on
it. Yeah, in Dota 2, there's the logo things behind them, and because you get every tournament has their own sponsors, which they plug relatively right. well. But
and he's
there
talking
tends
about
to
that.
Be a
he's saying like you either have the banners on the back, which he says will not happen. So it's up to leagues to do that, which I thought was an interesting cry, like a plea, but if a league is to spend their time giving credence to the people that made their league possible, but then also spend their time giving shout-outs to the countless sponsors that sponsor the different teams, that seems like the worst orgy of a commercial I've ever seen in my life. Like, can you imagine the broadcast between Idra and fucking Cruncher the next time? Well, Sound Blaster's Cruncher, who's having a heck of a time with 3D Entertainment, is going to bring in an amazing performance on behalf of, I don't know, Gamma Labs Energy. But, of course, he'll be dealing with a monster of a player who's got Intel on everything, and if he has the Steel Series of an eye set, he'll be able to be the Kingston of this match. You know, like, such a fucking horrible broadcast. You can't do that. So it's up to the players and the teams to go to those tournaments and represent themselves. So which brings me to the third tier, which is the secret message that Total Biscuit totally meant to say, which is leagues should not stop players from advertising what sponsored them to get them there.
Yes, exactly.
If a league stops those things from happening by telling them to take the bottles and shove it up their tuchus, then guess what? The sponsors that put those players in that place are going to have less return on investment. They're going to have less exposure. And sponsoring players and sending them to tournaments is going to be less lucrative to them, so maybe it won't happen as much. Or that league is going to have to realize they have to change the way they evaluate teams. They don't own them anymore. They can't tell them to play terrible games competitively for six-figure salaries. They have to actually share the wealth and let sponsors reap the reward.
I cannot really say anything to add to that. I think InControl nailed it.
Yeah, I think other teams need to plug their sponsors better in interviews and do commercials and the like and stuff like that and build their players into a brand. Because I think EG is doing a great job in terms of trailblazing in regards to that, but not a lot of other teams are following in their footsteps or even coming up with new ingenuitive ways and means of promoting their players. So, I mean, I think there's other ways to do it aside from just the EG model, but I don't think other teams are really experimenting with it or really coming up with anything that works. And I think they need to.
And someone was referencing the Red Bull LAN actually in the stream chat, and very rarely should we ever give credit to the stream chat or talk about it because that's usually where logic goes to die and then gets like molested by other bad things. The bottom line is Red Bull was actually amazing about it.
Yeah.
They are really good about sharing space with their sponsors, and they're okay with that. There are some leagues that literally tell their commentators to reference other tournaments and sponsors as, like, that thing happening in Sweden and stuff, and it's like, it just makes them look bad because everyone knows what they're talking about, but then it's like they're obviously trying to not give credit to them, and it gets weird. Like, give love to sponsors. Like, that's what Total Biscuit was getting at. The league should be okay with it being shown on their stream, with it being discussed on their stream. They still give more props to their own sponsors, as they should, but they don't pretend that they're the only sponsors on the planet.
All right. Smagasons, thank you for your call. All right. He left after the first three words.
He was probably so inspired by what he said.
He might have been like he was choked up a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. I have to take Barbara Smith. I just, before Goatlust, I have to. Barbara Smith, hello. We've been waiting for your call. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen.
Oh, hi. You have a question for the host?
I just wanted to add on to what the last caller said, actually. What Total Biscuit was referring to was online leagues having a far lower return on players showing up than a real league. Because when I see EG players at MLG, I can see their shirts, I can see the SteelSeries logo. I know what they're representing, and his concern was that on online leagues, they have absolutely no representation unless they're given an interview afterwards, like NAFL sometimes does.
And that makes sense.
That actually does. And then how Dota's kind of solving that is when another team plays against another team, like all the banners at the base, et cetera, show the team logo, you know, different things like that. And unless a map is created in the vein of something like that, there's no real way to do that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You're the guest.
Oh, sorry. So his Shoutcast Invitational solution was going to be that since he doesn't really have sponsors and it's all community-driven, he can just say, you know, do you have a couple sponsor logos? I'll just throw them up whenever you play. And the further they go in the tournament, the more exposure those will get, especially in the finals, which people watch more. So the better they do, the more their sponsors are shown. And he was wondering if the major leagues would be implementing something like that for their online-only tournaments.
Well, then I stand corrected because that's an absolutely good point about online exposure. And normally, like, a lot of people would throw that argument away by saying, well, online tournaments aren't as like big of a deal. But with TSL coming up, with IPL, MLG qualifiers, like, these are still big tournaments with high exposure. And it's a big deal when someone makes it through, like, let's say Sase makes it through the Korean qualifier. What a shame it would be if Quantic sponsors weren't given love throughout that entire amazing run, you know? So I think that's an absolutely good point, at least on like an overlay level or a commentator level, to be reminded on their notes to give shout outs to the sponsors for that team.
Can I add something? Because like that brings up an interesting point in that who's telling the commentators to do that? Like is it you know, it's, I mean, I firmly believe that that's a great thing to do, but like if I'm also commentating for an event that has conflicting sponsors.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, then it becomes almost like a principal thing. Like, man, am I even supposed to be like, Ed, by the way, you know, Team Evil Geniuses are sponsored by this, or Team Liquid sponsored by this. You know, because I agree. The more love that you can give teams and their supporting sponsors, the better. But I think it does introduce a problem as far as that's concerned when conflicting sponsors do come into play. Some leagues are fine with it being sort of the unspoken thing that happens. You know, there's their shirt and whatnot. But I don't know how you do properly represent that on stream without potentially pissing some, you know, sponsors off.
I think it's a cool ideal to aim for as opposed to like a rule that'll get established, right? Like, I don't think TSL will have throughout their thing, like, here's Idra, and then they fire through the EG sponsors. Like, I don't think that that's how it will function. But if on some level they're willing to play ball a little bit, and EG does the effort and submits, like, here's our sponsors, if you can give any love at all, it'd be cool. If not, we understand. Like, to just work towards that ideal, to tickle at it, I think that makes sense. But yeah, if there's conflicting ones, like, I don't think the league has any obligation to advertise for that conflicting sponsor. In fact, they have incentive not to, right?
Yeah.
I just always have a problem when there's a conflicting sponsor at, I guess I got on a tangent talking about like an MLG or a live event that you attend, because that sponsor sent them there, but online tournaments, that's a whole different ballpark.
Yeah, but even with an online tournament, I mean, it's like you're more than likely going to have the sponsors of the tournament itself, right? And they're probably going to get the most promotion. And then, I mean, you can just look at any other sports precedent as model. Or a sports model as precedent, excuse me. Look at like anything like that. It's up to the teams and the fighters to promote their sponsors. And then the tournament has its own sponsors, or the main sponsors that are promoted primarily by the broadcasters on stream.
What happened to Wheat?
On camera, things
I don't know,
like that.
Call and then pain user
it sounds out. Like he's in an epic battle or something.
I have no idea.
active.
Oh my god. I'm
what?
Sorry. I'm sorry.
What
happened? I'm sorry. No, hold on. I need a second.
this better be good.
I fucking did the word. I clicked a link in chat.
You hung up on it.
No, I didn't. Barbara's still here. I clicked a link in chat. I should have clicked. I'm sorry. I totally fucking.
I do that on my stream, but it's only because it shares audio, so then it fucks with all my viewers too.
It does.
I can't believe you still do that.
All right, I'm sorry. Holy shit. Oh. Sorry, keep going. I didn't mean to. We lost Pain User, but. Sorry.
He took that as an excuse to leave. Like, well, show's done now.
That's an acceptable casualty, I think. Like,
Barbara, thank you for your call.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate it. I'm pretty happy that, you know, I was expecting Barbara to be a troll. She was anything but. She clarified what the last guy was trying to say, proving that women are obviously superior to men in every way. And yes, even though they are a distraction, they are a necessary one. So, holy shit.
I'm back.
That totally. You know, it's like one of those. You ever seen the maze game where you're like playing the maze and you're focusing really hard? And then all of a sudden, like, some giant creature starts screaming at you. And you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, I just thought I was playing a maze.
The Nidus Worm.
You know, you guys don't know the maze game?
Nah, man. We play real
games. Is Reed explaining what happened to him?
Yes. You guys have never seen that? And so, wait, the link, it's gone already. Damn it. The link was something like, Idra reveals his training practice for July. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Let's click that.
I'm going to click on that.
Wait, in what fucking world does Greg, like, release a...
Here's my schedule. If you'd like to observe some of my games, please check this out.
In his spare time, he just, like, drew up what he's going to be, like, how he's going to practice in the future month. Like, on this month, I'm going to focus on two-base Roach Baneling all-ins against Terran. It'll be the week of August 2nd, 2012.
It was just like, it was absolutely the last fucking thing that I would have expected to see when I clicked it. Oh, man. Okay.
Sounded like you're doing a battle, man. It was awesome.
Oh, it was.
That was a war cry. Yeah.
It was fucking great, man. And then I realized it was killing all the ears of everyone listening. And I'm sure that my face was like a look of horror. Like, you know, I don't know.
I just saw a frozen frame with your head down on the table like that.
Oh, then I just started laughing so hard. But, okay. All right, take a Goatlust call. I'm sorry. Hello, yeah. Goatlust. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Oh, Goatlust.
This is not acceptable.
Goatlust cannot fail us.
What
now.
We'll stick here for hours until this works.
What the?
It's been a while, gents.
Go. fucking A.
Fucking dog.
No, Barbara was there. So, Goatlust, where are you? I'm pretty sure I didn't mute you.
My fucking internet connection, eh?
I'm double checking. I don't see any sort of muting going on. Alright. Oh my god. That's too funny. I don't know what happened to Goatlust, guys.
We've literally never had a show without him, have we?
Wait, I heard it. I heard a click. You. Hello?
Yeah, I'm serious. We're not going anywhere.
Go. Wait.
Can you hear me?
We'll take a school bus.
Hello? Hello?
I heard something.
I know you're halfway across the world and shit, but hello? I heard you for a second.
Give us three taps if you're still alive.
Did you watch the scary GIF? Did it scare you?
Your boomerang against the wall two times.
Did you? Okay.
What sound does a kangaroo make? We can
Goatlust.
Goes kangaroo.
He got in a fight with a kangaroo while wearing his headset.
To kill time, can I get rid of something that I've been wanting to get rid of for a while?
Can you hear me?
Okay, now we can hear you, but you're really soft. And normally you're quite abrasive.
I still don't hear him.
When that guy called...
You didn't hear him?
All I wanted to do was scream, like, I've only got one question! Greg! So you got the guts to win some games for once? Like, I don't understand. You play all day and you still lose. I don't get it.
Stupid,
man. Scotsman's all right.
This would be a shame. Hello? Goatlust, I hear you.
We got all day.
Quiet.
I'm giving out all she's got, Captain.
Restart the call then, or...
Yeah, let's restart the call.
Oh, I can hear it now.
Type it in the chat, man. We're not going anywhere.
We can have a Twitter conversation.
The day we end an Inside the Game without Goatlust is the day, Marcus gets attacked by a bear and Pain User,
Has the sound now?
Has airplane hit his head and shit.
There we go. We can hear you now.
Alright, thank goodness.
Yes!
Yes, goddammit. It was fucking mass panic over here, man.
Yeah, look, I was worried about the old Siberia. I was thinking maybe she'd given out.
Come on, man. Just like slap it a couple times on the side. It'll work.
Fine.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, yeah, not bad, not bad.
Sorry about the ears, man.
Yeah, no worries. It was actually pretty funny, eh?
I'm sure it was really fucking funny.
I thought it was pretty good.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
All right, what's up?
Yeah. Not a great deal.
I know you've got another awesome question for us this week.
Yeah. Did you guys see, by the way, old TB had a couple of choice words for you guys in the ITG thread on TL?
No, I didn't see it.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll check it.
It just seemed like he thought your comments were a little bit over the top. He said,
"I do not make over the top comments. That's fucking outrageous. I will kill the man that says that. That is so dumb."
That would be like calling our training house a frat party when he's never been inside of it.
I will abduct their future children.
That would be ridiculous.
All right. What was that your question?
Gents. Okay. No. I thought so. So a couple of days ago, maybe a bit more, MLG came out and they said that their little arena things are going to be free to watch now. And I'm just wondering, as a player, is this something that's, really good for you? You're thinking, fuck yeah, more people are going to be watching these games, more of my fans are going to get these games, it's more exposure, or, what were the drawbacks and, to the paywall model for, as a player or commentator, even if Wheat wants to chime in.
Go ahead, guys.
It's great for all of us because the benefit of the pay-per-view is for the organization. MLG is the only one who actually made more money off that, and some of that money goes into upping their production values. They put out a better product because they knew people were going to pay for it, so they had to live up to those expectations. So that makes us look better. But we don't get a cut of the money unless we're part of the partner program, and I don't think many players were. I know EG specifically was not. So we don't actually benefit from that too much, and it really cuts into their viewer account. So that's a lot less exposure for us and our sponsor and our team. So, yeah, this is great for us. It's really awesome that it was so successful that they were able to move back to the growing esports model, the get more viewers involved model.
So in a typical 1-2 punch, Greg's going to give the super positive response about how, this is a good thing for
everybody.
Because
that's what I'm known for.
That's what he's known for. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, okay? And I'm going to do it with my abacus, because this is quite frankly why I have it.
In what world do we live in where they were so successful that they had to revert the model?
Don't take my thunder! I don't...
Hold on, yes, it takes an abacus to explain this properly.
Don't do that. This was fucking designed to explain what I'm about.
All right.
So I'm MLG, and I'm running my arenas to make money. I announce, listen, we can't pay for esports off the goodwill of everybody. We can't run it for free. Okay? We need to make money, or else people won't make this happen. And everyone's like, I want free stuff. And they're like, shut it! We're going to charge for this, and it's for the better of everyone. Okay, so they charge for it. The first one does pretty good. Pretty good. They're happy with it. Okay.
Is that four beads or five? Because I'm playing a lot of
four of those black beads right there. And there's no difference between the blacks and the whites. I don't want you going down that path, Weed. I know how you go. So they do pretty okay. Okay? Next arena happens. They do about three beads. Nah, that one's stuck a little bit. So they do about three beads. Still pretty okay. They announce, we're happy. We're doing great. We're fucking making money. They do another arena. Does about two beads. Notice it's going down. And they're like, that's great. And then they go, guys, we did it. We did such a fucking good job of selling this, and it's been doing so great that in the future, it's going to cost nothing. And it's only possible because you guys did such a great job buying the passes to our arenas. Thank you for doing that. We made so much money doing that that we're able to just not do it anymore. It's going to be great. So, put the pocket abacus away for a second. In what capitalistic company, business model, you could go to a guy selling apples in China, and if he was like, I have apples, I'm not going to do a voice because that's racist, but he's like,
I have apples
for sale. There are apples for sale here. And someone goes, sir, I'll buy I'll buy 9 out of 10 of your apples. And he goes, that's fantastic. And he's like, that's more than I ever imagined. Well, I'm done selling apples because I've hit my quota for success. That's all I wanted to do is just like...
Okay. I revert what I said before. I just
yeah,
saw
for sure.
I just saw their statement and I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then I didn't think about it. Okay, that was dumb.
So yeah. The weirdest part for me is, like, you know what? That kind of stuff happens. I don't actually fault MLG for this. I appreciate Sundance spinning it that way and announcing it. The part that blows my
brain
gosh,
you, Greg.
Is that the entire
that was my
community,
flash picture moment.
The entire community goes, we did it, guys. Esports is working. We did it. It did so well. It sold so fucking much that they don't have to do it anymore. It doesn't work that way. And it's really disconcerting that a lot of people thought it did. That's scary to me.
That is kind of scary.
For a second. It's just such an easy way for him to put a spin on it and post it. Hey, guys, we did so well.
Well,
we're reverting our model. It's like, no. Like, if you understand business, that's just not how it works.
I mean, the comments Jeff's make, I think, is pretty spot on. But, like, one thing that's kind of interesting is that I'd be willing to bet, and I am privy to no information on numbers at all, but I would guess that the first one in the grand schemes of what they expected to do probably was pretty successful. But I think that there has to have been, like, the hand on the eject seat when there's not growth. Because it's like, it kind of is like the release of a box office movie, right? A box office movie comes out. How much money did it make the first fucking weekend? That's all that's important because it's simply not going to make as much money in its second weekend. And it's like a God's gift to fucking movies when that actually does happen.
Yes.
So when you don't see growth and aren't like, well, shit, man, it was only 1%. But guess what? It was 1% versus negative percent. Then you eventually have to, I think, jettison the shit out of that idea.
I don't doubt for one second that their first weekend was tremendously successful because of the novelty of it, because it was one of the first PPVs in StarCraft 2, because MLG does a great job producing. They turn out a great product. Like, a lot of people are like, $20 is too much. We had that debate on the show. And we're like, nope, they're going to give you your money's worth. And they did. It was great. But does that, as DJ Wheat said with the movie example, does that translate into a bigger sale the next time they do it? No, it was probably the opposite. It was probably going from here to here to here, and I wouldn't doubt that all three of them made the money, right? Versus a free stream, of course it's making the money, but they're noticing, well, our viewer count's getting lower, and rather than hit rock bottom and announce we fucked up, this isn't working, let's Michael Jordan the shit out of this and retire at top and announce it was so great that we don't have to do this anymore and it was only possible because of you guys. The part I have the problem with is not that what they did was the right thing to do, is the right business decision to do. It was the spin that was put on it, and how of the, like, 500,000 people that consume StarCraft II, literally 498,000 of them were like, like, that's correct. We did so good. That's scary, man. That lack of business sense is really scary.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'll
try and play devil's advocate for a second because I feel stupid for being one of those people. But, like, maybe... The money they draw in from that, the success they draw in from that brings them new sponsorships or it gives them the money that it takes to run a free event, and they actually believe that in going to a free event they get more and more viewers, and then that actually becomes more profitable in the long term. Like, it's not entirely unthinkable.
I think they can also look at something like DreamHack that's a free model that's hugely successful and be like, obviously...
That they needed the money, they needed to see if that was possible. And they got it, and they believe that this is the better long-term, more sustainable model, or at least the better model for now when we are still kind of in a growth period. It's better to bring in a new audience than to just feed a better product to the people who are already willing
to pay.
Well,
and, you know, one thing MLG is really good at is they're pretty good at selling, like, their brand to major companies. Like, we always talk about, oh, it'll be great it'll be great when, like, X company actually makes it into esports. It's like, you know, honestly, they've had that X company 3-4 times over. You know, who else has Bic shavers and you know, soft drinks that are not energy drinks? You know,
also showing that pay-per-view is possible as a profitable model could inject a lot of capital if they present that as business model.
It could, but I don't know if it necessarily worked out that way. However, what I did, what I wanted to say is that it's very possible too that in almost a GSL style fashion that they found another sponsor who's going to be coming on arenas that would buy in at a larger ad buy to be sort of the featured sponsor versus, you know, necessarily paywalling it, which might lower their exposure overall. So, I mean, of course, none of us have the glass wall into the MLG offices, so a lot of this is speculation. But
it's all speculation, yeah. Of course. I'm talking completely out of my ass. I mean, we're trying to be as logical as possible, as possible. But I think your guys' devil advocate play, absolutely. Maybe the PPV model, the product they turned out, the numbers they had, even if they were declining, was enough to grab a sponsor who said, I want on board with that. That's great for me. It still doesn't make sense to me that they're like, I want on board with that, and we're going to give you all this money, but I'd also like it if you would turn off the PPV because I want you to make less money and potentially we'll have more viewers.
If it is a sponsorship-oriented thing, then taking down the PPV. PPV brings a new sponsor a lot more.
Right. They would just offer an alternate stream.
Yeah, for sure.
They'd have a free stream and they'd have a PPV stream like we've had in the past. That way they can understand, it doesn't cost money to run that stream. Like, they just make money.
No, that same thing is still happening. Like, the gold members or the people who pay for it or whatever still get the better quality. And then they just have the free low-quality stream. It's just like the arena or the
right, champion. Right, no, exactly, exactly.
So that basically is what they're doing.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Good point.
All right.
Touché, sir.
Goatless, thank you for your call, sir.
Yeah, yep. I just wanted to say... We've got to chalk that problem up to Skype, eh? with the headset, eh?
Yes.
And I just wanted to say, SteelSeries, complete fucking geniuses. You know how your headsets always fucking twist up and all that shit? They got these fucking two things in the middle of the cord, and you can, like, unplug it halfway and unravel it. It's the best fucking idea.
It actually
ever.
It actually is, because Manny Wheat, who will like start doing 360s in his chair and stuff, and you're just looking at him and he's like a spider, you know, it's like a tangled spider web, and that, yeah, you just unplug him, like spin him back around five times and then plug him back in. It's pretty nice.
We were just talking about individual sponsorships, and look at Goatless going after.
Yeah, Goatless. I see what you're doing here.
Oh, hey.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks, sir.
Gents.
Peace. Good night. All right, that's gonna be us wrapping things up for the evening. As you can see, the sun's going down on my end. I'm too lazy to get up.
Not in Sweden, by the way.
What?
The sun never goes down in Sweden?
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Until the time when it never comes up in Sweden.
It's like everyone has been in that moment at like between 4 and 6 a.m. where you're still awake, you're still wide awake, you still... Dude, Peña knows exactly what I'm talking about. And you're like, you see the sun come up, and you're like... Son of a bitch, the sun's coming up. That means morning's right around the corner, and I'm still awake, blah. But in Sweden, it's seriously like 3:30. The sun starts coming up, and you're like, dude, I haven't started yet. What's going on? It's not okay. It's crazy over there. Final thoughts, I want to start with you, Check 6 Pain User.
Please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Pain User. And thanks for being on the show, guys. Thanks for watching, everybody. Big shout-out to X6 and our sponsors, TT Esports, Rush Order Tees, and Gamers Uniform. And I will see you guys next week on Tuesday. Have a good day.
Excellent. Idra.
It was a fun show. Happy to be back. Happy everyone watched. So thank you all. Follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. I stream idrajit.tv. I've been streaming a ton recently and plan to keep doing so until next tournament I go to, which is in a few weeks. So watch me there. And then big thanks to Team Evil Geniuses and all our sponsors, Intel Steel Series, or Intel Monster Steel Series, King Sniper X, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Everyone else over at evilgeniuses.net. That's all.
Thank you, sir. In control.
I'd like to echo my sentiments. Big shout out to our sponsors for making everything possible. Evil Geniuses, for being the team that is awesome. I also want to recognize that I poked a lot of fun at Total Biscuit, and I'm sorry. I really like the guy. I think he's an awesome caster, and I think he's a good man. Also, John Bain's like one of the most epic fucking names you can ever imagine. I do expect he'll take offense to some of the things he said. That's fine. I took offense to some of the things he said. But at the end of the day, there's a hug waiting for him right here. Right up against this. Right up here. I will wrap it around him, and like an abacus... He can count on it. Now,
that was excellent. Oh, that was good.
Thank you. I too am streaming In Control TV on Twitch TV. Today we talked about Mana Stream, so I'll be doing more of that in the future. Also, we're actually hitting a ridiculous string of events. So Asus was announced, Home Story Cup was announced, there's MLGs coming up, there's NASL Finals.
I Am Cologne not too long after Asus too.
Yeah, I Am Cologne. All this stuff is going to have some presence from a few of us here on the show, but also the rest of the EG guys, so stay tuned. Come out and see us, say hi, all that good stuff. And people are asking me about Warhammer 40,000. Still going to do that tournament. It's going to take some time, though. And Arizona, we're going to do a meetup pretty soon. Thank you to DJ Wheat for being awesome, and Pain User for, you know.
Oh.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. I have one thing to say, and you guys, Pain User, Idra, and In Control, you might not quite understand it, but I guarantee you that every user out there that watched tonight's Inside the Game is certainly going to understand it, and I leave you with these parting words of wisdom.
Thanks, Wheat.
Peace.
That hurt us more than anybody else.